Imagine a game of musical chairs where the music just never stops and the players keep multiplying.
Oh, and the carpenters have actively stopped building new chairs.
Yes, exactly. That is the bizarre, highly lucrative paradox of the May 2026 retail real estate market.
It really is.
If you already own a chair right now, you are in absolute control. But if you're looking for one, I mean, you are in for the fight of your life.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. This deep dive is brought to you by Eureka Business Group, your authority for commercial real estate brokerage in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specializing in retail.
Right.
Our mission today is to cut through the noise of the current CRE headlines. We are unpacking a massive paradox in the market. We want to understand exactly how retail real estate is thriving despite a, well, a highly restrictive macroeconomic environment.
And how those monumental corporate investments, specifically in DFW, are fueling this local ecosystem.
Exactly. So let's start with that musical chairs analogy, because the scarcity right now is truly historic. We have a staggering statistic from CBRE to set the stage. United States retail construction completions just hit a 20-year low in the first quarter of 2026. Developers delivered only 4.7 million square feet nationwide.
Which is, I mean, for a country of over 330 million people, 4.7 million square feet is practically a rounding error.
Right. It's nothing.
It really is. And that scarcity is the fundamental engine driving current valuations in the retail sector. When you strip away all the complexity of commercial real estate, you're just left with the basic mechanics of supply and demand.
Sure.
And right now, those mechanics heavily, heavily favor the landlords. Because of this historic lack of new supply, CoStar is now forecasting retail vacancy to peak at just 4.4%.
Wow, 4.4%.
Yeah, it's an incredibly tight, balanced market. What the supply constraint does is it gives retail real estate investment trusts, or REITs, massive pricing power.
Because they aren't competing with new builds.
Exactly. Landlords are no longer looking over their shoulders at a brand new, you know, modern shopping center opening down the street, threatening to steal their tenants.
Yeah.
Without that new competition, they have the ultimate leverage.
They can just dictate terms.
Right. They dictate terms, raise rents, and lock in long-term value on their existing footprints.
And we are seeing that pricing power play out in vivid detail in the first quarter earnings reports.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at Brixmor. They just reported record renewal spreads of 21%. And new lease spreads of 42%.
Those numbers are just wild.
They really are. Just to pause on that, a 21% renewal spread means a business that simply wants to stay in the exact same location they've been operating in has to agree to a rent increase of over a fifth of their previous rate.
Right.
And they're paying it because there is nowhere else to go.
Nowhere to go.
Brixmor also raised their full year 2026 guidance and cited over $300 million of active reinvestments. And at the same time, Realty Income deployed $2.8 billion globally at a 7.1% initial cash yield.
Yeah, and they also confidently raised their 2026 guidance.
But wait, I'm getting stuck on something here. You were talking about massive pricing power and retail booming, but my news feed in January was full of Saks Global filing to close 62 stores.
Oh, yes.
And then in February, we saw Eddie Bauer shutting down 150 stores. So if these massive traditional anchors are bleeding out and vacating huge spaces, how can we confidently say the retail sector broadly is winning?
That is a very fair question, and it really requires a crucial distinction. The distress you are pointing out is very real, but it is highly isolated to specific formats.
Like the malls.
Exactly. Primarily the big box centers, traditional enclosed malls, and apparel-heavy power centers. The retail sector is not a monolith, right? It's a diverse ecosystem.
Okay, so what's winning?
Well, while those larger legacy formats face massive contraction, neighborhood and community open-air strip centers are absorbing demand at a rapid pace. The physical store remains absolutely essential, but the footprint is shifting.
Shifting toward what, exactly?
Heavily toward necessity, value, and convenience. Let's look at how the market digests those closures. When a big box fails, a value-oriented operator swoops in.
Right.
For example, the discount chain Ocean State Job Lot just signed leases to take over four former Big Lots locations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which happened to be operated by Brixmor, actually. At the same time, we see companies like L.L. Bean, Dutch Bros, and Primark aggressively expanding their physical store counts. So the consumer demand hasn't evaporated at all.
It's just relocated.
Exactly. It has simply relocated to open-air centers that offer quick convenience, drive-through capabilities, and essential daily goods.
So if the national supply of retail space is virtually frozen, and everyone is basically fighting over the same open-air community centers, then hyper-local market expertise becomes your only real way in.
100%.
You can't just throw a dart at a map anymore. And that brings us directly to our home turf of Dallas-Fort Worth and a massive local shakeup that perfectly illustrates this demand.
Burp.
Yes, we just saw the merger of Duest Realty and DBA Commercial Real Estate. This isn't just a standard corporate merger. I mean, this creates a Texas-focused retail and land brokerage powerhouse.
It's a huge deal for the region.
The combined firm now features 33 brokers. They're managing 3.5 million square feet of retail across more than 50 active tenant clients, and they lease over 500 properties totaling more than 10 million square feet.
Yeah.
Why does a consolidation of this size happen right now?
Well, it happens because the complexity and the stakes of the Texas suburban retail landscape have never been higher. Deal velocity in Dallas-Fort Worth is relentless right now. When you have a market with virtually zero new product, off-market knowledge and deep relationships become the primary currency. Brokerages are consolidating to build the sheer scale and data infrastructure necessary to handle the influx of tenant mandates.
So they need the manpower.
Exactly. If you are representing a brand that needs 20 new locations in North Texas, you need a brokerage with enough reach to map out every single suburban growth node simultaneously.
And we can actually see what that growth looks like through recent data. CoStar just recognized the top retail leases in DFW, and the results underscore exactly what kind of retail is currently winning the space race.
All right, it's very telling.
The highlighted leases were dominated by experiential and home-related concepts. We are talking about major footprints for Floor & Decor, Auto Savvy, and the indoor entertainment park Lava Island.
Yeah.
Additionally, the global value retailer Primark just chose this market to open its 39th United States store, taking a massive space at Northeast Mall in Hearst.
Which is a huge vote of confidence for the area.
Absolutely. So what does this all mean for you? If you are a tenant looking to expand or an investor trying to place capital in DFW, navigating this fiercely competitive, low vacancy environment requires surgical precision.
You really can't do it alone.
No, you cannot rely on public listings because the best spaces are gone before they ever hit the open market. It requires the kind of on-the-ground, specialized expertise that Eureka Business Group provides. But let's zoom out for a second, because retail doesn't happen in a vacuum. A shopping center doesn't survive just because it has a nice facade. Retail follows rooftops, right?
Right, and rooftops follow jobs and infrastructure.
Exactly. To truly understand the underlying strength of DFW retail, you have to look at the massive waves of capital flowing into the region's corporate and industrial sectors. For instance, AT&T is making a monumental expansion in Plano.
Oh, that project is fascinating.
It is. The city just cleared zoning for a $1.4 billion, 2.3 million square foot global headquarters sitting on 54 acres. And it's backed by a $400 million JP Morgan Chase construction loan.
That specific development is a perfect illustration of how top-down corporate strategy dictates local commercial real estate strength from the ground up.
Yeah.
This new AT&T campus will be more than double the size of their current Whitaker Tower footprint in downtown Dallas. And they aren't just building a sea of gray cubicles.
Far from it.
The site plan is incredible. It includes a 280-foot cell tower, on-site daycares, multiple parking garages, and dedicated pedestrian bridges directly connecting the campus to the shops at Legacy.
Wow.
It is a massive undertaking that essentially shifts the center of gravity for tens of thousands of corporate employees further north into the suburbs.
But hold on, because this is where the national narrative clashes with our local reality. We constantly hear that office space is a dead asset class.
Sure, yeah.
That remote work won, and that companies are slashing their footprints. So with office distress dominating every major financial headline, why on earth is a legacy telecom giant like AT&T doubling its physical footprint to build a suburban mega campus featuring pedestrian bridges and daycares?
Because what we are witnessing here is the ultimate execution of the flight to quality. Corporations are intentionally ditching older commodity office space in central business districts.
Right.
To draw workers back to the office in a post-pandemic world, you can't just mandate it anymore. You have to earn the commute.
That makes sense.
So they are building highly amenitized, experiential suburban campuses. They are building complete destinations. By providing daycares, luxury dining access, and state-of-the-art facilities, they remove the friction of coming to work.
They make it easy.
Exactly. Furthermore, think about the ripple effect. This campus brings thousands of high-earning white-collar employees to a concentrated area in Plano on a daily basis.
Right, a huge consumer base.
That creates a massive captive audience for local retail, fast casual restaurants, fitness centers, and services in the immediate vicinity. Hmm. That is the engine that keeps neighborhood retail driving.
Yeah.
But importantly, it isn't just corporate offices driving this economic engine. Dallas-Fort Worth is cementing itself as a critical global infrastructure hub.
Exactly. The capital flow goes well beyond the traditional office sector. We are seeing massive plays in the logistical backbone of the region. For example, CyrusOne just secured a $1.05 billion commercial mortgage-backed securities loan to refinance two major data centers in Allen.
Huge numbers.
Huge. And on the industrial side, a Dolphin Industrial-led group recently bought a $207.5 million logistics portfolio featuring 19 properties, 13 of which are right here in DFW. This represents billions of dollars flowing strictly into North Texas infrastructure.
And that infrastructure is the foundation of the modern economy. I mean, data centers power the tech migration, and industrial logistics facilities ensure the supply chain functions for a rapidly growing population.
Right.
When institutional capital places billion-dollar bets on the physical infrastructure of DFW, it guarantees job growth, which guarantees housing demand, which ultimately cements the consumer base that retail real estate relies upon.
It's all connected.
It is a deeply interconnected ecosystem.
So we have this incredible corporate and industrial influx physically reshaping DFW. The fundamentals look bulletproof. But commercial real estate is a capital-intensive business, and we have to address the elephant in the room. The debt markets.
Ah, yes. The debt markets.
The current macroeconomic environment is incredibly unforgiving right now. On April 29th, the Federal Reserve held the federal funds rate steady at 3.50 to 3.75%.
Right.
What's truly unique about that meeting is that there were four dissents from board members voting for a rate cut. That is the most division we have seen on the Fed board since 1992.
Wow, 1992.
Yeah. It shows profound uncertainty at the highest levels of our monetary policy. Meanwhile, consumer sentiment just hit a record low in early May, and rising gas prices are actively squeezing restaurant traffic.
Which darkens the outlook for a lot of national chains.
Exactly.
That's true. The higher-for-longer interest rate environment is forcing a brutal reckoning across the entire real estate industry, but the pain is not distributed equally.
How so?
Well, when we look at the distress realities, the data is highly segmented by asset class. TREP recently reported that while the overall commercial mortgage-backed securities delinquency rate actually eased slightly to 7.54% in April, multifamily delinquencies surged to a record 7.71%.
A record high.
Yeah. And Texas is absolutely not immune to this pressure. Texas commercial real estate foreclosures topped $1 billion for May auctions alone.
Wow.
Which is the highest level we've seen since tracking began in 2025. But if you look closely at the filings, that distress is overwhelmingly fueled by the multifamily sector and older Class B and C office buildings that are hitting maturity walls they simply cannot refinance under the current rate structure.
I have to admit, I'm struggling with a major contradiction here.
Okay, what is it?
We just got the National Jobs Report. United States job growth actually beat expectations in April with 115,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate is holding incredibly steady at 4.3%. Mm-hmm. If people broadly still have jobs, and they are still earning consistent paychecks, why are we seeing record low consumer sentiment, and why are apartment complexes going into foreclosure at record rates?
It's a fascinating disconnect, and it is entirely driven by the lag effect of inflation on the consumer, combined with the brutal mechanics of debt maturities on the real estate side.
Okay, break that down for me.
Let's look at the consumer first. A recent note from the Dallas Fed showed that new international tariffs boosted the 12-month core personal consumption expenditures inflation by about 0.80 percentage points.
Okay.
And that peaked right here in the first quarter of 2026. So even though a consumer has a steady paycheck, they are feeling the compounded daily pressure of sustained price increases at the grocery checkout and the gas pump.
Right. It just wears them down.
Exactly. That constant friction squeezes their discretionary income, tightens retail margins, and completely tanks their overall economic sentiment.
Okay, that explains the consumer feeling broke despite being employed. But what about the real estate side? Why are apartment buildings going under in a booming local economy?
Let's break down that maturity wall for a second, because it is crucial to understand. The multifamily distress we are seeing is largely disconnected from the health of the current local employment base.
Real?
Yeah. Imagine you bought a large apartment complex in DFW back in 2021. The market was red hot and you paid peak pricing. To maximize your returns, you used floating rate debt because interest rates were sitting near zero.
Right. Money was basically free.
Fast forward to today, and your 3-year or 5-year loan is suddenly due. To refinance that property, you now have to borrow at today's much higher rates.
Ouch.
Suddenly, your new monthly debt payment to the bank is vastly higher than the rent you can reasonably collect from your tenants. Because of that dynamic, the actual value of your property drops below what you initially borrowed.
So you're underwater.
Your equity isn't just low, it is mathematically gone. You hand the keys back to the bank.
So it doesn't matter if the building is 95% occupied by paying renters. The math on the debt itself is what kills the deal.
Exactly. It is a balance sheet failure, not a failure of the local economic engine.
Wow.
And to add another layer of complexity specific to Texas, recent state legislative changes altered how certain tax exemption structures work. These exemptions were frequently used by developers to offset the costs of providing workforce and affordable housing. When the law changed, it unexpectedly increased the ongoing tax burden on those specific properties, further deteriorating their operating income right as their loans came due.
That's a perfect storm.
It really is. The underlying DFW economy is incredibly strong, but the capital structures from 2021 are collapsing.
That brings all of these threads together perfectly. Dallas-Fort Worth remains an absolute economic juggernaut. We have massive corporate, technological, and industrial investments laying down deep physical roots in the region, bringing thousands of high-paying jobs. For the retail sector specifically, that translates to incredibly high consumer demand. But when you pair that demand with a historic 20-year low in new retail construction, you get a fiercely competitive high-stakes market. In an environment where the supply is frozen and the debt markets are punishing any miscalculations, having the right local broker, like the specialists at Eureka Business Group, is the absolute difference between capitalizing on this specific boom or being left out of the market entirely.
I think that captures the reality perfectly. And looking at the stark disparity between those booming retail fundamentals on one hand and the soaring multifamily distress on the other begs a question for you, the listener.
Yeah.
Taking all of this into account, what stands out to you as the biggest hidden opportunity in your local submarket? Where is the friction creating a chance to step in?
That is exactly the strategic thinking we need right now. To wrap things up, I want to leave you with one final, slightly mind-bending thought to ponder as you look ahead.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've talked extensively about the physical footprint of retail today. But a new joint report from ICSC and McKinsey just dropped a massive projection about tomorrow.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah, they estimate that United States agentic commerce, which refers to highly advanced artificial intelligence shopping assistants, could reach $1 trillion in revenue by 2030.
That's incredible.
But we are talking about AI autonomously handling the purchase of your paper towels, your groceries, and your basic commodities. But paradoxically, that exact same report notes that nearly 40% of Gen Z and millennials still strongly prefer physical experiential retail for product discovery and social connection.
Interesting.
Right. So here's the question. As artificial intelligence takes over the mundane transactional side of shopping, will it actually make the physical brick-and-mortar store far more valuable as a curated human experience?
That's a great question.
The game of musical chairs we talked about is not ending anytime soon, but the ultimate prize for securing a seat is rapidly evolving. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.